Madiba, with humility and through his good humor and selfless service, rose to an unparalleled place in the hearts of countless of millions of people in South Africa and throughout the world. And the messages of support that are pouring in the presidency are a phenomenal experience. They tell us a very important message that in the world that is conflicted with itself, Mandela has become an embodiment of unity and hope for the world and for the future.
And how are the burial arrangements going, Mr. Maharaj?
I think the arrangements are going on track, and South Africa is in its own special way in mourning, but in a form of mourning that is celebrating the life of this wonderful person. The arrangements are on track. The funeral will be in Kunu on the 15th. There will be memorial services. The body will lie in state for viewing, for the coffin to be viewed. And thereafter, there will be memorial services where leading people will be making their tributes to this wonderful son of the world.
And let's just talk about your time with Nelson Mandela. When did you first meet him?
I first met him on a face-to-face direct way in prison in January 1965. And, well, that's now over almost 50 years ago. It has been a wonderful experience. I was in prison for 12 years with him. I think I see those 12 years as very special because they gave me the opportunity to be at the feet of leaders like Mandela and Sisulu, to live with them, to eat with them, to sit by side with them, endure all the hardships of prison, to share the great moments and disappointments, to share the exhilaration of standing side by side and struggling against the harshest conditions in prison, to learn from them above all, though I'm quite clear that I never managed to learn everything that they were ready to impart to me. But it has been a very special experience, and it will be something that has left a total imprint on who I am, what I am, and how I have lived my life.
But how was life like on Robben Island?
As you know, the apartheid system had decided that no newspaper, nobody could carry even a photograph, refer to any prisoner, political prisoner. It was unlawful for any paper to publish that. It was hoped by the regime that by consigning us to the Robben Island prison off the shores of Cape Town and with no news about us, we would be forgotten, we would be living in a tomb. Conditions at the beginning were physically harsh and psychologically harsh. Later on, they relied more on psychological forms of pressure. In a perverse way, even that harsh physical, psychological, humiliating treatment that we were receiving defeated the very purposes of that exercise. Because by putting us all political prisoners together, the regime provided us with the unique opportunity where we could stand by each other, pick each other up when any one of us faltered, help each other survive the trying times, help each other stand together in solidarity and struggle together. And through that struggle, we grew stronger, more determined to carry on with the struggle. Prison became just one part of the long and arduous journey to our freedom.
What were some of the best moments that you remember that you were with Madiba?
Countless incidents, big and small. But I think for me, the most enduring message is what Mandela refers to in his autobiography, where he says that once he realized that the system was there designed to destroy us, he realized that whatever they did to us, there is one inner core of each individual that cannot be destroyed, and that is one sense of dignity. You can only be robbed of that if you yourself are complicit with those who seek to rob you of your dignity. And I have seen it in countless incidents. I saw it when the general head of all South African prisons, a very gentlemanly person who usually a general who usually visited in a black suit, white shirt, a discreet tie, and he reminded Mandela that we should not be complaining about the conditions because we were not in a hotel. We spoke to him quite firmly and rudely. Mandela's response to him was to say, "General, we're on the opposite side of this war. You're a general on that side and I'm a general on the other side. One day the two of us will still have to meet, even if it is for one to receive a surrender from the other. But the quality of that moment will depend on how we treat each other even now." And I saw the general raise his eyebrows and realize that here was an adversary to whom he could not avoid but show respect. Because without showing that respect, he ran the danger of losing his own respect. I think this is a major lesson for me, an eye-opener and a message of how to conduct myself.
You were also the one who was responsible or who was sent to Robben Island to smuggle some of the very first draft of Mandela's autobiography, Long Walk to Freedom. How did you manage to do this?
Well, I don't think I should be revealing to the world the criminal ways of getting smuggling things in and out of prison. But yes, it was a task that was assigned to me. And I am happy to report that we did it successfully. However, the book didn't get published in the time that we had planned. But when Mandela was released, something like 25 years later, I was able to give him a copy of that manuscript so that he could use it to shape the final version of The Long Walk to Freedom. It was concealed in study materials by making concealed compartments in the covers of books, notebooks, by making files with spaces in the file cover. And altogether, we had reduced 600 pages of text into 60 sheets of paper, thin sheets of A4 size paper. It was a team effort. The whole project was a team effort. Mandela was writing from memory. He was writing 10 to 15 pages every night without having the previous pages to look through to refresh his mind. And it was done in a concentrated burst by him between January 1976 and April.
There were also times when you went on hunger strike. How did this come about?
Prison conditions, as I said, were extremely harsh. And in order to gain redress, we raised it repeatedly with the prison authorities. We raised it verbally. We raised it in writing. We formed ourselves against the rules into a structure where we had spokesmen on our behalf. Mandela was, of course, naturally our spokesman in the single cells. And in the end, when none of those were helping to change the mind of the authorities, we decided to launch hunger strikes to force the authorities to change and to accede to our demands. I know in the early hunger strikes in the communal section of the prison, where prisoners were kept in 62 a cell, they were punished, and some of them had their sentences in prison extended by a few months more to their long prison sentences on the grounds that through going on hunger strike, they had endangered their health, and that was treated as a criminal offense. However, it was but one form of struggle. And I'm happy to say, because of world support, because of the support of the people in South Africa, the international campaign and demanding the release of political prisoners, conditions arose where the South African authorities were compelled to improve our condition.
There's one incident that we just have to discuss briefly because it fascinated me when you were writing it. When Kenel went to Mandela to ask why he was on strike, what was his response?
That was the time when we went on strike without knowing why we were going to. We just got word through somebody who had prisoners who were bringing our food to say that the main section of the prison